Good evening and welcome to the local news. Today is Tuesday, September 30th, and I'm Nat Cardos reporting for KMUD. In tonight's news, Humble cancer advocate Selena Donahue goes to D.C. to urge Congress to protect cancer research funding. Humble County Sheriff's Office implements Sublocade program to address opioid crisis. So stay tuned. Those stories and more coming up.
Redwood Community Radio acknowledges that its transmitter sites are located on the unceded territory of the Tsingkiyon, Wailaki, Wiyot, Wilcut, and Kato people. We honor ancestors past, present, and emerging, and acknowledge the ongoing cultural, spiritual, and physical connection these tribes have to this region.
Prior to the deadline for government funding, which is today, September 30th, Selena Donahue of Humboldt County joined nearly 700 other cancer patients, survivors, and the American Society Cancer Action Network advocates on September 15th to make her voice heard while speaking to Congress about securing highest possible funding for cancer research and prevention for the National Institute of Health, NIH, National Cancer Institute, NCI, and the Centers for Disease Prevention and Control, CDC. KMUD News spoke with Donahue, who is also a tribal health consultant, about why this is so important, especially for rural and tribal communities like in Humboldt.
So I've been working in public health for the last 20 years. I've worked clinical pathology. I worked at UC Davis Cancer Center. Previously, I worked with American Cancer Society and Cancer Control. And then now I'm a tribal health consultant, and I've really worked a lot in our tribal and rural health communities. Growing up in Hoopa and a small Indian reservation in Northern California, just the health access. And then, you know, when I moved back, raising my kids, we just see the disparities and the inequitable access to health and to cancer diagnosis. You know, I mean, it was just, I mean, I can remember I was really young, having kids, not access to cars, the local hospital. I can remember having injuries and not having a ride out to the hospital. And then, you know, as I got older, you know, again, you know, in a lot of our tribal languages, there's not even a word for cancer because cancer's, you know, relatively new. And then as I got older and worked in the public health world, just really seeing that we really needed to do something up here in our rural and tribal communities. We're so far away from any NCI cancer-designated cancer center, and just care we get is challenging, and there's a lot of barriers, and cancer treatment should be equitable no matter your race, ethnicity, where you live, your geographic. It should be accessible to everybody.
Significant and unprecedented proposed cuts to research funding, staff reductions, and policy changes at the NIH, NCI, and CDC pose threat to the future of cancer research and potential cures. The administration has proposed slashing NIH funding by $18 billion, reducing it to levels not seen since 2003, or even the mid-1980s when adjusted for biomedical inflation. Fortunately, both of the House and Senate Appropriations Committees have rejected these drastic cuts to the NIH and NCI. On September 16th, advocates outside of the Capitol made their voices heard, explaining to policymakers that this could have dire consequences if the other cuts do go through. Donahue speaks more about her time in D.C.
It was truly amazing just being able to see the difference. All of us as volunteers with ACS CAN coming together and talking to the legislation and Congress and really telling those personal stories. They just really make a difference in how important it doesn't matter where you live, what state you're from, your age, cancer affects all of us. And to really see the movement being made on Capitol Hill is just unexplainable. It was very rewarding. You know, it's just, you know, right now, especially more time than ever, it is really critical that our Congress, you know, really supports the highest possible funding increase for NIH and NCI and the cancer prevention programs. You know, a lot of us, you know, especially in these rural communities, we use a lot of those programs. We use a lot of those, you know, cancer research programs. And it's just so important. And cancer doesn't stop. It doesn't wait. And it affects so many of us. We all know family members or people in our communities that have been affected by cancer.
Advocates have also been urging for lawmakers to pass the Nancy Gardner-Sewell Medicare Multi-Cancer Early Detection Screening Coverage Act. This legislation would create a pathway for Medicare coverage of future MCED tests, once approved by the Food and Drug Administration, FDA, and proven effective. These tests have the potential to test for multiple cancers at once, with only one blood test, adding an important additional option to help detect cancer.
So the multi-cancer early detection test, it's a test that we have the potential to detect multiple cancer through the use of a single blood test. And so if legislation does not mandate Medicare coverage, it's simply going to provide CMS with that same authority to decide whether to cover an FDA-approved multi-cancer screening test. And that's going to help bring the benefits for screening many types of cancer that we don't have the screening for today. So it's really important that the government really passes the NSAID.
For more information, the website is cancer.org/about-us/what-we-do/advocacy. A disclaimer from the news director here at KMUD. Due to unprecedented technology crashes today, some of the story from this audio is not up to the typical quality standards here at KMUD News. However, I do believe that this is an important story to put on air, and though we were unable to re-record this interview before news time, we do still believe it is important to air. So please bear with us, and thank you for your continued support of KMUD News. Starting October this year, the Humboldt County Correctional Facility will offer Sublocade to inmates in the Medication-Assisted Treatment Program, MAT, that are nearing their release dates through an initiative launched by the Humboldt County Sheriff's Office. Sublocade is a once-monthly injectable medication used to reduce cravings, block the effects of opioids, and significantly lowers the risk of overdose. KMUD News spoke with Sheriff William Hansel for more information on what Sublocade does and how the program works.
Yes, Sublocade, if you don't already know, is a prescription medicine that is prescribed for people that have severe opioid use disorders. So these are the people that are addicted to opioids, and it's an opportunity for them to take this long-acting injectable that will curb their desire or appetite or for opioid. And so this is something that we're offering for people that are in custody under circumstances and for those that are addicted and in our medication-assisted treatment program custody when they are scheduled to be released. So it's an exciting program, and we're happy to offer it now.
The program is part of their MAP program, which was started several years ago in response to the opioid epidemic. The MAP program provides inmates struggling with addiction with Suboxone, which is a medication that has similar effects to Sublocade, but for a shorter amount of time of 24 hours instead of 30 days.
So several years ago, we were right in the middle of the opioid epidemic, right? And, you know, we do a job with trying to get those hardcore drug dealers and those kind of, we've seen some major bust kind of things. But we also see the repercussions from their being addicted or to opioids. And so we decided this is a correct facility, not just a facility that's there to punish people, hold people accountable, also to correct their behavior. So we did this several years ago to start an education-assisted treatment program while in custody. There's medication-assisted treatment programs, you know, all over North State. A doctor's office, some of their standalone clinic, maybe public health related, but we decided that we're going to partner, you know, some of these clinics and have a medication assisted treatment program in our facility. So we do offer Suboxone to those people that do qualify, and Suboxone is a prescription medicine and that basically is a 24-hour buprenorphine, which is essentially that opioid antagonist that will curb that addiction for that 24-hour period. And we do get that daily medicine to several inmates when they're in custody. It's been going on for a couple of years. We've desired to get the long-term injectable. The injectable lasts 30 days. And so one injection administered by a nursing staff, and then your appetite for opioids is curbed for 30 days. And so we thought, man, what an awesome thing to offer people when they are leaving custody, and less people would likely die of a dose when they leave custody if they're on this long-term injectable. And so this is something that we tried to do for several years, but the one big hurdle prevented us from doing this was the cost. The cost per shot is about $1,500. And so we did not have the budget to administer the program until now, and that's where the opioid settlement funds can and provided us that opportunity.
HCSO has been pushing for getting Sublocade for this program for years, though their biggest hurdle was the fact that it is $15,000 per shot. Through the Humboldt County opioid settlement, they now have $150,000 annually for the next 3 years to fund the program. Here's Hansel with more on what the Humboldt County opioid settlement is and how it helps the program.
Yeah. So opioid settlement funds, as we know, the pharmaceutical companies made billions of dollars off prescribing opioids, you know, to our community, and oftentimes over-prescribed opioids and got people addicted. So several counties took these big pharma companies in a lawsuit and took them to court, and they won a settlement. And so we're a part of a larger county settlement where these big pharma companies settled out. They're paying millions of dollars to to counties to try and provide opportunities to help with the opioid crisis. And so our county has received millions of dollars, and it's gone into an opioid settlement fund. There's a settlement committee that's established by the county, and so there's rules set up in the state of California of how you can spend this money. Establishing a Medicaid assistance treatment program is one of those mechanisms, and so we pitched our idea to get our Medicaid assistance treatment program in custody funded by the opioid settlement funds and to offer the long-term injectable deductible. So the committee decided to provide $150,000 per year for 3 years to provide these injectables to people that are scheduled to leave custody. And again, hopefully that would buy them 30 days to get them on their feet, to help them establish good behavior outside of custody and not fall back in their addiction. So
starting October of this year, HCCF nursing staff will begin administering Sublocade injections to eligible participants in two priority groups: individuals in the MAT program who are nearing their release date, and individuals with severe mental illness who struggle to maintain daily Suboxone treatment. The program is entirely voluntary for inmates who want to participate. For more information, the website is humbledsheriff.org. In national news, KMUD's former news director and current KPFA news director, Lauren Schmidt, interviews Representative Latifah Simon about looming government shutdown.
Thank you for joining us, Representative Simon. To start, it's just hours before the government shuts down at midnight on October 1st. What is your sense of negotiations, and what should the public understand about what's at stake?
Our fiscal year ends tomorrow night, September 30th. So usually Congress has to pass 12 what we call appropriation bills to fund the federal government. The Republicans in the Congress, in the House and the Senate, have completely blown this funding process. And as a new member of Congress, it has just been shocking to see their lack of wanting what we believe is to do the very minimum, the bare minimum for the American people. And so the looming shutdown, no one wants it. No one wants tens of thousands of folks to go without services. Just in my district alone, for federal workers to go without, potentially to go without pay while the government is shut down. One of the things, sister, that we will not do, I know I will not do as a sitting member of Congress, is capitulate with the Republican agenda that wants to take 15 to 17 million people off of their health care. Everyone in this country, regardless who you are and how much money you make, you will, based on their big horrific bill as it stands now, your rates for insurance will rise as early as January. And many folks will be robbed of their health care insurance altogether. That's a non-negotiable.
Even if there are concessions on those subsidies, should Congress move forward with funding Trump's government? And pending your answer, what is your message to the thousands of federal workers that will be furloughed without pay?
It's not just the federal workers. It's also the 970,000 folks throughout the state of California who could potentially lose their WIC benefits. Here's what I know. The Republicans, since the beginning of the year, have canceled hundreds of millions of dollars for grants, for services, for cancer research, for education. They have completely, on a daily basis, with the administration's support, violated the Constitution of the United States. They have sent federal troops into our city. They are kidnapping American citizens and folks who deserve their day in court, who are seeking asylum. To the federal workers, including my own, here in my office, who are young people, folks who need to pay rent and childcare, it's an abomination that the Republicans are holding the American people hostage. I want to be clear. The Republicans, because of this last election, they have the House, they have the Senate, they have the presidency. Some would say that they have the judiciary. If there is a shutdown, it's because they are not willing. They are not willing to take their hands off the necks of low-income Americans. And we are saying full stop. You will not rob the American people of their basic inalienable rights. I'm hoping if there is a shutdown that it is swift and that the Democratic leadership will use every single power and leverage point that we have to earn back, to claw back what we all deserve. And again, we have to stop this train of madness and persecution and lapse of democracy that the Republican Party is waging on the American people. I don't want us to shut down, but we got to fight with all that we have.
I want to pivot to the Block the Bombs Act, which you are a co-sponsor of, and it seeks to prohibit the transfer of certain U.S. weapons to Israel unless there are clear assurances of compliance with humanitarian law. Why did you co-sponsor this bill, and would it apply to the alleged weapons shipments through Oakland?
Yeah, thank you. I came to Congress representing California's 12th Congressional District from a lineage of those who know that war does not make us stronger, full stop, that we can't fund a machinery of death, that safety is not found in carnage, and that safety, in fact, is found in care and not conquest. I proudly sponsored, I'm an original sponsor of the Block the Bombs Act. You know, it's super straightforward. It's super straightforward in a time where, you know, every humanitarian organization across the world is saying that there is a genocide in Gaza. This bill simply says that we will block the bombs, that we will require the withholding of weapons to Israel and ensure Israel's compliance with U.S. and international law. We have to block the bombs. We can't send bombs to a government that uses the access to food as a weapon of war and bomb civilians. These are clear human rights violations. So I am clear. I am clear as one new member of Congress, but my hope is the tides are turning, that we're all as a nation able to see and view what's happening. And we're demanding one thing, that we stop our capitulation and hopefully hold Netanyahu accountable. And we have that accountability to me in this moment looks like we stop funding that genocide.
Thank you again, Congresswoman Latifah Simon.
Gaza remains occupied by Israel as countries call for ceasefire and two-state solution. KPFA's Anthony Perazzo reports.
Gaza remains under occupation from Israeli forces while an increasing number of countries are unifying behind calls for a ceasefire and the recognition of a two-state solution, resulting in sovereignty for both Israel and Palestine. United Nations representatives from Palestine, Israel, and many other countries met to discuss the need for a solution to the crisis as it continues to get worse. Australia, Canada, France, the United Kingdom and others have announced their recognition of an independent Palestinian state. Meanwhile, the European Union is considering tariffs and sanctions on Israel. The Assembly this month passed a non-binding resolution urging Israel to commit to an independent Palestinian nation, which Netanyahu has said is a non-starter. A representative from the United Kingdom explained her country's decisions to formally recognize the state of Palestine.
The United Kingdom reaffirms that a two-state solution remains the only viable path to peace and security for both Israelis and Palestinians. That is why, last week, the UK formally recognised the state of Palestine. The two-state solution is under threat from relentless violence, deepening humanitarian catastrophe, and political obstruction. In the West Bank, the Israeli government continues its stranglehold on the Palestinian economy, further destabilizing the Palestinian Authority.
Palestine's representative said there are certain rights that must be protected for all people.
All peoples are endowed with a certain rights, known as inalienable rights, and our people are not less worthy and are not less entitled to them. The Palestinian people have a right to life, to liberty, to security, and to dignity. The reality our people continue to endure is one of death and devastation, dispossession and colonization, despair and displacement.
The United Nations representative for Israel said Prime Minister Netanyahu, working with U.S. President Donald Trump, shows Israel wants a ceasefire, but blamed extremism from Hamas as the reason there can't be peace.
If you will not face the extreme forces in Judea and Samaria, we will have to go in and deal with the terrorists. Look what happened in Gaza. We left Gaza 2005, 20 years ago, completely. We gave you the keys. We told you, you will rule Gaza, the PA. You got the opportunity, but you were not able to confront the extremists. Hamas took over, and then we had no choice after October 7th to go in.
The representative from Palestine said Netanyahu has personal reasons for wanting the war to continue.
Because the moment they have ceasefire and beginning of peace in Israel, you know what will be the future of the prime minister, who is a wanted international criminal by the ICC.
The International Criminal Court has issued an arrest warrant accusing Netanyahu of crimes against humanity, which he denies. And the UN's highest court is weighing South Africa's allegation that Israel has committed genocide in Gaza, which it vehemently refutes. A defiant Netanyahu told fellow world leaders Friday at the UN General Assembly that his nation must finish the job against Hamas in Gaza, where 48 hostages are still held captive, 20 of which are believed to be alive. Dozens of delegates from multiple nations walked out on his speech. The U.S. ambassador to the United Nations was the only member of the Security Council to back Israel, repeating claims that last week's recognition of Palestine by several countries amounted to rewarding Hamas. While the council met in New York, former President Trump and Israeli Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu held talks at the White House, announcing they had agreed on a plan to end the war. For KPFA News, I'm Anthony Perazzo.
And in National Native News, Antonia Gonzalez reads today's headlines.
This is National Native News. I'm Antonia Gonzalez. It's National Truth and Reconciliation Day, also known as Orange Shirt Day, honoring the survivors and children lost in Canada's residential school system. As Dan Karpinchuk reports, on the eve of the day, a multi-million-dollar settlement and an apology were announced for one northern school.
The agreement in principle is aimed at compensating the former students of the Isle of Cross boarding school, just under 300 miles north of Saskatoon.
Simply put, these schools were a mistake, and they shouldn't have existed.
The Premier of Saskatchewan, Mo Scott, went to the community on Monday.
Today, on behalf of the province of Saskatchewan, I apologize to you. And as part of this agreement, the province has agreed to pay $40.2 million to address the four major pillars of compensation under the class action that was filed.
The compensation, Mo says, is an effort to promote reconciliation, healing, wellness, education, language, culture, and commemoration in the community of Isle of La Crosse. The residential schools operated across most of Canada from the mid-1800s to the late 1900s in an attempt to assimilate First Nations, Inuit, and Métis children into white society. It's believed about 150,000 children were forced to attend the schools. Thousands were physically, emotionally, and sexually abused. Many died. The Saskatchewan government expects the proposed settlement will be approved by the courts by early next year. I'm Dan Karpinchuk.
The U.S. Interior Department has reversed a Biden administration decision to give Alaska tribes legal jurisdiction over Native allotments. As KNBA's Rhonda McBride tells us, the order could return millions of acres of land to state control and shut down the Acluna tribe's new casino near Anchorage.
This latest federal opinion attempts to restore a 1993 Interior Solicitor's opinion issued during President George W. Bush's administration. It gave the state jurisdiction over Alaska Native allotments. But last year, the Interior Solicitor in the Biden administration, Bob Anderson, issued a new interpretation of that decision. It gave jurisdiction over Native allotments to the tribes, which cleared the way for the Aklutna tribe to operate a small casino on a Native allotment. Last week, the Trump administration's Deputy Secretary of the Interior overrode Anderson's opinion and instructed all department bureaus, including the National Indian Gaming Commission, to follow the 1993 opinion. Anderson now lives in Anchorage and is a visiting professor at Harvard. He says the reversal of his decision is wrong, that Native allotments in Alaska should be regulated by the tribe just as they are in the lower 48.
It's been the law in the lower 48 forever, and Alaska's part of the United States, and the same federal laws apply here as they do everywhere else. So I'm fairly confident that we'll continue to prevail on these questions.
In April, the state of Alaska sought an injunction from a federal court in Washington, D.C. to shut it down. So what happens now that the Interior Department has revoked tribal jurisdiction over Native allotments in Alaska? The state has not said what its next step will be. Patty Sullivan, communications director for the State Department of Law, said the new opinion calls for the Interior Department to reevaluate actions taken by the National Indian Gaming Commission. Alaska's Attorney General Stephen Cox applauded the decision and said it restores jurisdictional balance that Congress intended. But despite last week's opinion, the Native village of Aklutna said its Chenan Gaming Hall remains open. The tribe's president, Aaron Leggett, said it will also review the opinion to clarify questions of legal jurisdiction. In Anchorage, I'm Rhonda McBride.
And I'm Antonia Gonzalez.
Native Voice One, the Native American Radio Network.
That's all for tonight's broadcast. Thanks for listening. Thanks to our engineer, Katie Phillips, and thanks to our reporters, Anthony Perrazzo, Lauren Schmidt, and Antonia Gonzalez. KMUD News is online, and you can find us on KMUD.org and now streaming on most podcast platforms, including Apple Podcasts and Spotify, where you can download our stories and newscasts for offline listening during your rural commutes. You can also follow us on social media. If you have questions or suggestions, you can give us a call at 707-923-2605 or send an email to news@kmud.org. Are you passionate about your community? Looking to report on what's happening around Mendocino? KMUD News is looking for stringer reporters from the Mendocino area to cover local Mendocino stories that matter. Whether you're a seasoned journalist or just eager to learn, we'll help you get started. You'll get training, support, and a chance to amplify real voices from your community. If you're interested, email news@kmud for more information. Redwood Community Radio, Inc. is funded by Press Forward, the national movement to strengthen communities by reinvigorating local news. Learn more at pressforward.news. Reporting for KMUD, I'm Matt Cardos.